I don't know. Look, I haven't been following the game as intimately as Andy Harper has, and I'm talking about the round ball get code of football, the world game, as intimately and as closely as he has for as long. But I'm going to make a statement here as Andy Harper, one of the great men of world football and the great game here in Australia, joins us. I'm going to make a statement. Hello, Andy. Lovely to hear from you. It's been far too long.
Cocker, way too long, mate. Way too long.
I'm going to put to you, my friend, that this is the greatest week. Just let me say soccer for the sake of this audience. The greatest week that soccer has ever had.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to argue. It's hard to argue. Melbourne victory would mount some sort of argument to that, I guess. But in general, it's hard to argue since God knows when. I mean, these freakish occurrences happen by definition only from time to time, and we tend to think, tend to absorb all our memory space. But I know Liverpool's escape act in the Champions League final involving Harry Kewell like a decade and a bit ago now was a pretty special result. Manchester United's victory even before that in the Champions League against Bayern Munich, stunning comeback. They happen from time to time. But I guess the sequence of games last week, Cocker, just remarkable. Just when you think it couldn't be matched or bettered, those players all around the globe managed to decide to have a say.
Well, it goes back even. I had the series, you know, that I'm referring to written down in front of me. So I have the benefit of knowing what I've got in front of me, and you don't. But I go back a couple of nights before the Champions League second legs were played out. That goal that Vincent Kompany scored at the 70th minute to get. You know, Man City threw that really. You could feel it, mate. It was tightening, and I was watching it obviously with the Liverpool hat on, hoping like hell that Brendan Rodgers and Leicester could do something for us. But the magnitude of the strike and the quality of it, and coming from you know the character of the man that he clearly is, it just set up this chain that was to follow. That it just kept getting better and better and better. And domestically, we played into it. I mean, with the first of the semi-finals in the A-League, you had to see it to believe it. It was extraordinary. We'll have a chat about that on the way through as well. But it's just one event after another.
Mate, I couldn't put it any better than you. In fact, you should ring up yourself and interview yourself on this stuff. Play with yourself, as it were.
Thank you very much.
And hindsight's brilliant because Kompany scores that goal and everyone goes into fits one way or the other, either celebrating, commiserating with Liverpool or just blown away. With no inkling whatsoever that there was a possibility for what was to unfold. But when you look back, it did light the fuse on that incredible week. I mean, that's it. Liverpool were dead playing against arguably the best player of all time. That argument does range. And it just ridiculous. And that Barcelona had chances in that game to make it 4-0 on aggregate themselves and put it, well, you can't say now it would have been beyond reach because Liverpool might have found a way out. But that just, it was just an incredible week. And Ajax really, I was personally very disappointed that they'd lost that match. And this is nothing against Spurs, a team I liked, but this was a chance to get a team from a country outside the Big Five leagues into the final of the Champions League. And that hasn't happened since Ajax, indeed, in 1996. So it's 13 years ago since a team from outside the Big Five leagues of France, Germany, Italy, Spain and England have managed to get to the final at least. So very sad on that front, but happy that Spurs have broken their duck, I guess.
So, Harps, at the end of the week, we've got two English clubs, I'm not going to say English teams, English clubs in the Champions League final, and we've got two English clubs in the Europa League final. They're managed by a German, an Argentinian, an Italian, and a Spaniard. How much, and I want to talk to you about the A-League as well, you know, before our chat here is up, but how much has, you know, that incredibly profiled league been the beneficiary of having these high quality, like arguably you know, the best managers, you know, and we're not in Pep Guardiola's not even one of those four. How much has that league and the way the football's played and the type of players that these clubs have been able to attract, how much has that league been a beneficiary of the quality of managers that it's been able to attract?
Well, that's the cycle. I mean, the players follow the managers who follow the players who follow, bing, bing, the money.
Yeah.
And the Premier League has become the most moneyed competition on the planet. There is no sign of that changing. In the 80s, of course, the big money was in the Italian league, and that's where all the foreigners went. And, of course, the money flows into Barcelona and Real Madrid, so top players go there. But as a league, quite obviously, the big money has followed the English Premier League with no signs of any abatement there. And so, really, on that money register, the English Premier League club should be dominating these European competitions. And they might do from here on, but the fact that they've filled all four available spots in the finals of the two European championships competitions just reinforces that fact. I guess for followers of English football in general, the concern is that these impacts of globalisation, the most globalised sport on the planet is soccer, and the most globalising agent in the world is soccer, and that's really come into sharp focus with what's happened in the Premier League this year in particular. But the fans of English football in general is wondering what are the flow-on benefits to English football as opposed to the English Premier League. And that's a whole deeper question that is a very difficult one to come to grips with because of the dominance of money.
Oh, well, I think I read something, you know, and in the middle of all of this, we've got, you know, kind of the playoffs taking place in the championship at the moment, which are, you know, in and of themselves a fantastic competition right on the edge and, you know, full of, you know, tension for obvious reasons. But I think I was reading somewhere the other day that 80% of the teams in the championship are broke. Like they're running at a loss, and that's the second tier down. God knows what, you know, once you get down into the other divisions, the lower reaches and grassroots football in a nation like the United Kingdom, you wonder if the second tier is leaking the way it is. You wonder, to the very point that you're making, how financial and economic the whole model is.
No, it's not. Yeah. I mean, it's not. And this doesn't start just with championship level. I mean, the vast bulk of the Premier League clubs are sailing close to the wind, if not tipping over the edge, including the big guys. I mean, this is not and it's funded by, in some cases, sovereign wealth. It's funded, in the case of the City Football Group, for example, that's the Abu Dhabi royal family. This is sovereign wealth you're up
it's
against.
A good point.
Or incredible individual wealth, the likes of Roman Abramovich, who fund football for a number of reasons. I'd say pretty low on the pecking order is to return himself a dividend, a cash dividend. It just doesn't happen. The fact of the matter is, however, there's only so many of these guys to go around. They set the benchmark. They set the level of competition in the marketplace. And even though UEFA come in with these financial fair play rules, under which scrutiny Manchester City find themselves at the moment.
And it's sort of trying to shut the
gate after the horse's bolted.
Yeah. So that's a story that's emerged, you know, in recent times, that one that you talk about. There's some speculation that if one leads to another, they might be banned from European Champions League football next year. Is that the ultimate upshot from an on-pitch perspective as to what might happen to Man City?
Well, that's the insinuation. Whether it's for next season or not is even more speculation, because one can't imagine that the process of finding an outcome, imposing a sanction, and then inevitably the appeal from the club involved, happens to be Manchester City now, but it probably could be any of them, that the appeal process will drag this whole thing out. So I can't see this happening for next season, but this might be a sentence which hits, if it goes through all these processes and still comes out, they've been found to have been misdealing with things, then it might be the season after. But yeah, this all came out with the investigation by the publication in Germany, Der Spiegel. This was a few months ago now, and obviously the City Football Group has vigorously defended their position and welcomed the scrutiny. So we'll now just wait to see what happens.
So there's a couple of leap-off points there that I want to get to as a result. And you've got a big brain, and I know you don't mind taking questions without notice. But before we get away from the City Group, in a nutshell, how do you assess how that group is handling its team in our domestic competition at the moment?
Well, there's two ways to look at that. The first, a knee-jerk reaction, is to say it's an utter disappointment. But to be a little bit more circumspect and to give them the benefit of the doubt, which still does remain, around whether the City Football Group and Melbourne City are waiting for the political situation in Australian soccer to settle for the clear direction on the look of the new league or the new look of the current league as the ownership structure, etc. The benefit of the doubt as it exists goes to them waiting to see how those cards fall, after which point the benefit of the doubt then evaporates. They've got to go for it once they know what's happening. That's the only thing really stopping from me with respect to just opening the shoulders, because I'll just revert quickly to the first point I meant, the knee-jerk reaction. Incredibly disappointing when you see what happens around the world with this organisation. When you compare stylistically, you compare Pep Guardiola, Ange Postecoglou, and one of Pep Guardiola's closest lieutenants now coaching at New York City Football Club in the MLS in America. You compare those three styles up against what Warren Joyce brought to the A-League, and you have to think, where's the alignment here? And that was the big selling point, I think, to the fans, is a competitive team. Well, that hasn't quite worked. Competitive, yes, but trophy winning hasn't delivered. And then the alignment with this global football enterprise, it just has fallen short. But I still, with no allegiance to the club or the people at all, I do extend the benefit of the doubt, because the turmoil around the game over the last couple of years has been significant. And if that's the single thing that stopped them from really going for it, well, it's beyond me, really, to level particular criticism, if that's their approach.
You know, the voice of
Longstaff... Does that make sense?
It does. No, absolutely. No, everything you say makes sense to me. No, always. That's...
That makes one.
You know, the voice that belongs to Andy Harper, one of the great men of football and one of the great people bringing it to us on Fox Sports on a weekly basis. So going back to still continuing the Citigroup, and this is the ultimate question without notice, and if you want to take the fifth, I'll allow you the opportunity to do so. But given what Man City's been able to do in the last 2 years to the level that they've been able to do it, you know, finishing 14 unbeaten, 14 wins in a row to win it this year, and 100 points on the board last year. Can you remember too many better club teams than what Man City, in this iteration of it at the moment?
No.
Can you remember too many better teams than it?
What a great question. No, you can't, because pound for pound, they're supposed to be doing this with some semblance of regulation, called the financial fair play. The great Milan team of the 80s wasn't so encumbered. The great Liverpool team of the old First Division, which won European Cups, and I think probably was the cornerstone of their huge fan base in Australia, just watching the Kenny Dalglish era of football. I mean, these teams are all unrestrained by any financial fair play. Equally, however, they haven't been bolstered by the significant impacts commercially of globalisation, which, you know, was probably a twinkling in the eye of the economists in the 1980s. But now we see the full force of it. And the resources available to these football clubs and their owners to invest in their teams is unparalleled. So it's a tough one to answer. I think what speaks... because of those relativities.
Yeah, of course.
I think what speaks to what Guardiola does is that, and poor old Liverpool, to score that many points on the table and still finish second. I mean, you've got to wonder where the hell you go next to beat these guys. And the only hope is going to be, I think, from the outside, is that if Manchester City have actually broken whatever rules people have agreed to, that's really the only thing you can see pegging them back a little. Because it's awesome. Why that hasn't translated consistently into Europe is the big question confronting them, however. And we'll wait to see if they can find an answer for that.
Perth v Sydney, after one of the most dramatic A-League semi-finals and an almost inconceivable capitulation by the Melbourne Victory. Credit to Sydney FC in the other one, but they were half gifted, you know, to a degree what they ended up with in that second semi. It was hard to believe some of the chaotic stuff that Melbourne Victory were producing in that. Is it Perth to lose, or is the pedigree of Sydney just so significant that this is a tough one to make a call on?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, how good was Sydney? How poor were Melbourne Victory? What we know out of that match is that Melbourne Victory's performance stunned everybody, including themselves. I'd say it was just, I can't ever remember a Melbourne Victory team dishing something like that up, given the stakes at play. And so did that make Sydney look a better candidate for a championship than maybe they are? Well, we don't know. What we do know is that Sydney will go to Perth knowing that they've beaten them a couple of times this season, and they've done it over there. It's a very difficult road trip, particularly given the way Perth are at the moment. And irrespective of how poorly your opponents may have played, having been in that situation before, you score a bag full of goals, mate. It doesn't matter how bad they were. You still feel great. That coupled with the fact that they've had Perth's measure this season, and I think that actually by no means a fluke, have a game and a midfield that can really put Perth under enormous pressure, give Sydney a great chance. Because what did we learn out of the Adelaide-Perth game, apart from the sheer miracle of sport, was that maybe Perth have got a weak spot and maybe Adelaide found it. And with a little bit more quality in the Adelaide team, and I'll say in passing, massive kudos to Marco Kurtz and that football club to have been so competitive without the resources at play. Maybe Sydney can expose that. And Perth come in with, even after last week, still question marks over Neil Kilkenny's fitness, the best midfielder in the comp this year, in my opinion. But he carried an ankle injury into last week's game, and his impact was dulled somewhat. If he can't regain his best form in time for Sunday, then that particular scale tips the way of Sydney with Brandon O'Neill, who's just flying at the moment. And that's the centrepiece discussion, because Sydney's midfield can beat Perth if they get a sniff of it.
It shapes as being a fantastic conclusion to the season. Roy Krishna, of course, winning the Johnny Warren, and he's been a sensation this year for Phoenix, and congratulations to him. And Christine Nairn wins the Julie Dolan medal as well for her season. So the awards were handed out last night. Andy, always a joy to have you on the show. It happens far too infrequently for my liking, but you're a very hard man to get hold of.
Cocker. Now you're passing on responsibility, bro. My phone works all the time. You've just got better things and better people to talk to, admit it.
Very rarely, my friend. Thanks for joining us. There's been a lot to watch and take in, and there's a lot to look forward to coming up. I'm sure that millions of us around the world will be doing it together. Thanks for your time.
Good on you, Cocker. See ya.
Andy Harper, part of the great team at Fox Sports, covering the round ball game.